Well, welcome everybody. It's about just a little bit after 9:30, so I think we'll get started and try to keep this on time. I'm Nate Angel, a client evangelist with R-Smart, a Sakai commercial affiliate, and I'd like to welcome you here today to this panel that we've convened to talk to you about Sakai 3. And I'd like to start off by introducing the folks, the distinguished colleagues that I have up here on the panel with me. Participate in the Sakai community in a variety of ways, and I'm not going to go into all the detail, but if you're part of Sakai, you probably already know about that, or if you're interested in Sakai, you can learn a lot more about them. In the middle, we have Josh Barron, who is the Senior Academic Technology at Marist College, and also is currently serves as the Chair of the Sakai Foundation Board of Directors. The Sakai Foundation, as you may know, is the 501c3 nonprofit organization that coordinates the work of the Sakai community. And then over on my far left, your right, we have Mara Hancock, Director of Educational Technologies at the University of California, Berkeley. In addition to her work at Berkeley, Mara is also a leader in a new project, the OpenCast Matterhorn Project, which focuses on a kind of end-to-end video system for scholarly uses. And then closest to me, we have Lance Spielman, scholarly technologist from Indiana University. And in addition to his work at Indiana, he's now dedicated to the managed project for Sakai 3, which is the development effort behind the Sakai 3 work. I'm not going to say a lot more about them, but the goal here is to try to bring in front of you three people who've been deeply engaged with Sakai 3 in order to give you a little bit more understanding about how it's actually hitting the ground in the community and being used in real context. So one of the first things I wanted to talk about before we turn it over to Josh, who's going to go first, is to talk a little bit about the naming of Sakai 3. And because we're an open community, we don't have a whole team of branding experts standing behind us who are figuring everything out in advance with focus groups. And as a community, one of the things that we've struggled with a little bit around the Sakai 3 is the degree to which it is a kind of different thing than what Sakai 2 has become. And Josh is actually going to talk about this a little bit more in depth. But part of that has been a little bit of conversation in the community about what to call it. And we've been calling it Sakai 3 up till now, but one of the messages that calling it Sakai 3 sends is that it's an upgrade to Sakai 2. And that's not, while it is an upgrade to Sakai 2, that's not a completely accurate description of everything that Sakai 3 is. And so the community as a whole has shifted to starting to talk about Sakai 3 under a new name called the Open Academic Environment. And those three words should resonate with you. About that kind of give a descriptor of what the Sakai community is trying to do with this. So we don't even really know how to say it yet. actually Lance was going to call it soy, which is maybe nice because that's a nice healthy connotation. But if we just think briefly about what Sakai 3 is, there's just a few kind of themes that you might use to think about what Sakai 3 is. We're not doing a demo of Sakai 3 here today, so I just wanted to take a second to just orient you around what Sakai 3 provides and why it is a little bit of a new environment. And part of it is this is a background where we're dealing with what I call classic LMSs in the marketplace, all the ones that you know and probably use, and this includes Sakai 2, and they're all at this point functionally equivalent and mature. And the question is, as scholarly technologists, to use Lance's title, where are we going to go next? What kinds of interactions are we trying to support? And they go beyond what the classic capabilities of an LMS have done to date. And so if you look down this list, you can start to get an idea of what some of the activities that Sakai 3, formerly known as, or the Open Academic Environment, is trying to support and underwrite. And I'm not going to read it off for you because I'm not a big fan of reading off slides, but you see it in front of you. And what I'm more interested in doing is turning the mic over to my colleagues here so that they can start to flesh it out a little bit for you and hang some meat around what Sakai 3 or the Open Academic Environment really is. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Josh, and he's going to delve in a little bit deeper.
Thanks, Nate. I knew we were a bit of a cold, so I apologize if I'm a little congested here. It's good to see everybody coming out so early in the morning. I'll try to do this relatively briefly because we have obviously some other folks on the panel who are going to speak briefly, and I think we're most interested in answering your questions. And we had a dialogue about what the future of Sakai really is going to be like. Before I jump in to this brief overview and description, I was kind of curious about what all of you are thinking right now Sakai 3 represents. So I hate to do a pop quiz this early in the morning, but how many people have been thinking about it as an upgrade to 2? All right. That's good to know. How many see it as, you know, another kind of traditional learning management system or course management system, seeing it that way? All right. How many people are looking forward to sushi for breakfast this morning? Sorry. So actually, the real question here is how many people just have no idea what it is? All right, so about a third in each area. So we'll have our work cut out for us probably. So I'm going to kind of talk about what, at least from my perspective, Sakai 3 represents. And to a large degree, I think it's really an evolution in both Sakai as a collaborative learning environment, the 2 version that we've been using now for many years at our institutions, but also an evolution of the learning management system technology in general. And I think this evolution is being at least in part driven by this emerging concept of the personal learning environment. How many people have heard that term before? Oh, that's good. That's changing. So I think it's still a relatively new concept. I don't know that there's a really good firm definition of what the personal learning environment is necessarily, but some of the characteristics here that I have on the slide I think are kind of particularly important. They generally leverage Web 2.0 tools, so blogs and wikis and RSS feeds and things of that nature. I think they also use a range of different frameworks to allow users or learners to bring these Web 2.2 tools together in a very customized environment, bringing together content with our social networking capabilities, again, into whatever kind of mix of those things works for you as a learner. The power and the reason why I think personal learning environments have become very significant in our dialogues and conversations in higher education recently is that they're really beginning to facilitate a new powerful kind of self-directed learning. On the right side of the screen here, I don't know how well everybody can see it, is a screenshot of a part of my personal learning environment that I use every day. I happen to use iGoogle to bring together a number of different things into one place. There's obviously lots of different frameworks and tools you can use to do that. On the left, you see some RSS feeds from NPR and CNN. My Google Calendar. On the right, you see Google Reader aggregating a number of blogs I watch, and then, of course, the critical Twitter feed that I'm constantly checking, although I've started to try to use it only to reward myself, so once I've actually gotten some work done that I can go actually look at my Twitter feed. I did a little kind of completely unscientific experiment a number of months ago with my personal learning environment of just counting how many things did I learn from this in a week. And within just a few days, actually, it would far surpass the 40 little nuggets of information that I would have probably missed or not known about without having had this personal learning environment that I was watching and using on a regular basis. You know, that's a very, I think, powerful concept from a teaching and learning and even academic and research perspective. But it is very different than the traditional learning management system that most of us have been using in our institutions for many years, which tend to be fairly closed systems behind your university firewalls, within your networks, not very open to the public. They tend to be very kind of supportive of status quo kind of learning environments. So, you know, typical lecture or online kind of course kind of structures, and also very teacher course and even institutional centric. So these tend to be things that you set up for your students in a way that you think they should be using it, and not necessarily in a way that gives them great a student or learner great flexibility in how they put it together and interact with it. Personal learning environments contrast with that pretty significantly. They tend to be very open environments where, you know, anybody that you're interested in interacting with at any one time might be part of your Twitter feed and available through your personal learning environment. So they're also very participatory and also obviously user and learner-centric kind of environments. Now, you know, I've been talking about the personal learning environment as a very positive and, I think, powerful thing. There's also pros and cons with these tools. So for all of us working in IT, I think the idea of saying let's just stop, you know, drop the LMS and everybody just create their own personal learning environment and put all their final grades and assignments out there for the whole world to see has serious challenges. You can't do that, at least here in the U.S., with FERPA regulations and privacy and security issues. So, the reality of using personal environments as they exist right now to replace the LMS is probably not super practical. And I think that challenge is one that I think has really been out there for some time in the Sakai community being discussed and looked at. And Sakai 3 and this open academic environment, I think, is really the community's response to this challenge. And so, in a sense, the way I view the open academic environment is this mashup between the learning management system and the personal learning environment. In a sense, taking the best of these two worlds and bringing them together in a way that is robust and secure that we can implement at our institutions, but gives students the power and faculty members and researchers the power to have a flexible, customized, and when they want, open environment that they can engage the rest of the world with. And so this is a diagram that I think really illustrates this very well that John Mott from Brigham Young University put out in the Educars review article just in the last couple of months. And so you can see there's things like your SIS system, your grade book, things that are important and critical to have protected in your university network that need to remain there, but things like your portfolio, your blog, even on a discussion you might be happening that you want to open up to the world to participate in your course that might be better placed out in the cloud or at least available and open to the public. You obviously need security here, so some type of semi-permeable security membrane is the way I think about it, that lets the data that you're okay sending out to the world go, but other stuff not, and then some things can come into your environment in your university and other things can't. This particular concept, I think, is a challenging technical one to implement, but there's a lot of progress that's been made just in some cases very recently in the open standards movement that's really allowed Sakai to take advantage of those things as means to facilitate creating this kind of open academic environment. So things like the IMS course cartridge standard, learning tool interoperability, LTI standard that I think maybe Lance will talk a little bit more about in a bit, open social APIs and so forth. And I'm not the, you know, deep technical person, so I'll let Lance answer questions about that. But those open standards are allowing us to do things that I think just a few years ago were concepts, but not something we could practically necessarily implement, but are now a core part of what we're doing in the open academic environment. I almost said Sakai 3. So. So the last slide here. So I'll just end by talking a little bit about how the open academic environment is being designed, because I think this is an important differentiator and also not necessarily how Sakai 2 and Sakai 1 necessarily were born. So over the last academic year, the 2009-2010 academic year, the Sakai Teaching and Learning Group, which I'm heavily involved in and has become, I think, a very central and vibrant part of the Sakai community, engaged in a very intense visioning effort to really look at what does the future of the learning management system look like and need to be to meet the needs, not just today in a traditional learning environment, but I think is going to be significant change over the next 5 to 10 years with things like open educational resources, open standards, and so forth. And I'll skip over many, many brutal months of 5-hour phone calls with people all around the world and a lot of intense effort, and just talk a little bit briefly about the final outcome of this visioning effort, which was really the goal of it was to chart a path, an evolutionary path forward for Sakai and in a sense learning management systems in general, and also to create some design tools, because we all know that designers, Java developers, folks doing UX design don't necessarily have teaching and learning and research and academic backgrounds, and so we really wanted to give them some tools to be able to understand what we as teaching and learning experts felt were important learning capabilities to support in this new system. And so the end result of this is a concept we're calling learning design lenses, and there's now 7 of these that we've defined along with 32 facets or, in a sense, sub-lenses. And you can do, if you do a search in Google for learning design lenses in Sakai, you'll find those quickly. We've released our first version of these under Creative Commons license, and there's a graphic here that actually David Goodrum here from Indiana put together, who's heavily involved in that illustrates at a high level what these lenses look like. And so, again, this is creating a vision, an evolutionary chart for where we want to go, but also these design tools. And the reason we call them lenses is the concept is that as developers and designers are working on a tool, they can peer through these lenses to understand what a teaching and learning person would want to see in a capability in that particular tool. And so just as one example, you can see one of our 7 lenses is the openness lens. So you can imagine a developer working on an asynchronous discussion tool. So there's obvious things you're going to want in that, ability to post a message, reply to a message. Those are pretty straightforward. What that person may not be thinking about is the future that in 5 years, if not even today, teaching and learning folks want to be able to take that discussion that you had for the first week in your class privately and open it up to the world to start coming in and interacting with your students and teachers and researchers. Or maybe there's a group of 4 or 5 CEOs at different corporations. You want to invite them into your discussion to interact with your students. Those are powerful learning capabilities that are often very difficult to do in our closed LMSs today. And so by peering through this openness lens, our expectations, those working on these systems, will understand that that's a capability that we expect and need to have in this system moving forward. And I think one of the exciting things, and I'll end on this point, that came from all of this last year is that in the Sakai 3 Open Academic Environment effort that's now underway, this is a managed project with several institutions around the world coming together to pool their resources to do this development work. The roadmap for that project now has these lenses right in the front of it as embedded in that roadmap of this is ultimately where we want to see this all going, which certainly made those who had been working on this in the teaching and learning community very excited about it. So with that, I will turn it over to Mara.
I thought you were going to bring the microphone down for me, which is always the humiliating part of this. No, it's not that bad. So I'm going to do a little change up here. Josh did a great job of talking about some of the big picture paradigm shifts that we're really dealing with in Sakai, and I want to just add to that I think especially these learning lenses are a great example of where by academia for academia really comes into play. We have the ability to look at the work that we're doing and the tools that we're developing in a way that I don't think anyone else can, and we have the ability to bring those communities into the conversations directly. So that's really valuable. So at Berkeley, we are both involved with the managed project, And we are, in parallel with that, running as fast as we can to also get it into implementation on our campus. And I'm going to talk a little bit about what that looks like for us and some of those conversations we've had in trying to describe this thing to our campus and the value of making this change. So just to give you a sense of the landscape that we live in, we are a Sakai school. Our Sakai instance is called B-Space, and we've been running that since 2005 and bringing our campus iterative improvements every year to the LMS, and recognizing we've had great success. Our entire campus community, faculty, staff, students are using B-Space. About 80 to 90% of our courses have sites every semester. 99% of our students have used B-Space as a student. And many are involved in it every day. In fact, people who are doing surveys come and ask us to put it on the front page so that they can actually get the kind of response rate that they're looking for. We also have many project sites, and those range from thesis projects, publications faculty are working on, committee work, to things such as a way that our staff and departments bring together and communicate to the majors. So we started to see this very vast set of use cases that, yes, they were the learning environment and learning system, but they were also the student life and the campus communications. And we needed to start thinking about things in a way that really took into account this entirety of our campus community and these individuals and these profiles and roles as a whole. So in parallel to us thinking about this from our educational technology hat, students started to really lead the way in demanding a student, what they were calling a student portal. And as we've dug into this, we've had a number of surveys that have led to this. And what they are really talking about is improve my online student experience. So they use the word portal, but it really is a misnomer. And it really is a disservice in that it doesn't really explain how deep they want us to go. They really... right now, they have to go to, you know, I don't know how many different sites there are. There's at least 25 different sites they have to go to for just their administration. So they're drowning in all of these one-off solutions. They want us to be able to pull that together. And one of those one-off solutions is our learning management system. We also have a project that is looking at ways that we can bring together more cohesively a number of our services. So it's how we interact with each other and with our students, as well as some of these different systems that we run. So looking for a more seamless kind of environment. And the campus is now ready to really put the resources and staffing behind this, as well as, I should say, the visioning behind it. We've got some great people coming to the table. And in that, we're also a Kuali student school. But even if we weren't, it would be the key time for us to be looking at how Sakai and Kuali need to come together to increase the capabilities and as we look at the future learning environment. So this is the student's world, a little glimpse here. All the different systems they have to go to just to understand what it is that they have to get done at what time. And it's very easy to fall through the cracks and miss dates. And in a large university like Berkeley, that can mean another year on the campus trying to complete your work. So everything is assembly required, you know. If you want to remember something, you have to go to all these different sites and figure out how to keep track of all these different issues. The other is, how do I make decisions about my learning path? And we have academic services and advisors all across the campus. We have a whole range of different kinds of student services that help students depending on their background and goals. And so, again, they have to go out and find those things. How can we put together a meaningful experience for them and help guide them and create a place where they can really thrive and see the opportunity rather than survive by sort of crawling through these different sites and this vast amount of information? So this leads us to, here we are over in our learning environment. We're using it for all of these different things. It doesn't always match the use case. So we want to bring these things together, right? But what is this thing? What is this thing we're talking about? And I have this up here not necessarily for you to read it and grok all of the various circles, but more to show, as we're looking at Sakai 3, the range of the context that we're looking to support in this world. It goes from, at the very high level, sort of the social, online, learning and collaboration, to really highlighting things around social interaction as well as content, teaching and learning, and learning activities. So we really are looking at this as being a world in which we can address all of these things. So as we were trying to explain this to the folks that we're trying to get to help us do this by investing in our project, these are the sort of four areas that we're trying to very concretely say, what is this thing? This is the next generation teaching and learning environment. Indeed, it is, a number of you raised your hand. Yeah, it's the next thing after Sakai 2.0. Yeah, that's what it is. It's the gateway to our student systems and services. And I think the services is key here because we can automate a lot here. But what Sakai 3 really brings is this sense of community. It allows people to come in as individuals with their roles and interact with one another in those different roles. It's a gateway then also to our faculty services and academic systems. Our faculty are facing many of the same things our students are facing. So bringing these things into the same environment, leveraging the work we're already doing for students by bringing those services to faculty, and then the academic and student life and collaboration environment. Now, this may seem like a no-brainer. I mean, we were all out on the floor yesterday and the day before, and we saw all of the various companies who are touching parts of this, and they're all overlapping in different ways. And I think what we're talking about when we talk about this open academic environment is a way that we can think about this more holistically and seamlessly for our campus community. So when I think about it, I think Sakai 3 is really about transforming the experience for our campus community. And it's transforming the online experience. It's becoming a center in which real things happen. It's not a gateway to where things happen. It's the center to where things really happen. So quick visual of some of the things that we're looking at rolling out in the relatively short time frame. In fact, we're rolling out some beta to some students starting next month and then into the spring semester. And I'll talk a little more about that soon. But you can see here just the My Reminders, which is a way that the campus messaging can pull up to the surface all of those things that the students need to make sure they deal with in a timely fashion. We have the My Links, which is at least the beginning of a confluence of where all of that information is, where all these sites are. We consider that sort of the low-hanging fruit. It's the gateway, and then we're going to be able to go deeper. And then up in the right-hand corner, near and dear to my heart, is the we're introducing it with the integration with OpenCast Matterhorn. So our webcasts will flow right into this environment, and they'll be able to do deep searching against all of that content so that regardless of if they're in that class, if they're trying to learn more about a certain context or subject, they can do a search here and find all the video that might lead them to the answer that they're trying to discover. And bring that up and play it in that same environment. So this is where we're seeing it in terms of the entire enterprise. And I think this is a pretty important one of the things we are selling to our campus, and I hope Lance can help confirm some of this, is that we're thinking that this is really going to help us develop a deeper bench on our campus of developers and innovators who can actually add to this environment. So that can be your students. That can be your faculty, who we know many faculty are already doing things here. Then they're out, have to work outside of our walled garden of the LMS. And it can be other departments on your campus. And, of course, people out in the world who are doing good things, such as Google, Facebook, et cetera. Then, you know, we have teaching and learning. We have the gateway for all of our individual staff, faculty, students. It's important that they feel like this speaks to them. With the Qualy Student Services, Identity Role and Services, and our OpenCast services as well. Then you can see our permeable membrane there, no longer the hard concrete wall of the castle. We can bring in our Google, we can bring in our Facebook, and those will change. Those will change, and as my good colleague Bruce Santor said the other day in the OpenCast presentation, we have to be prepared for change. That is what is constant. And so if we want to be valuable and do the best with our investments for our campuses, we need to figure out ways that we can do that. And then things like making it customizable for the individual student or faculty member, which is, can I see my family's calendar here too and marry it with my student calendar so I know whether I can go home for Thanksgiving, or I know when it's my little brother's birthday and I make sure that I call and webcast. I also have a little cloud here. You know, other campuses, we're talking about a fully multi-tenant system, so we should be able to think about ways in which we can pool our investments and provide these kinds of services across various campuses at universities. Hopefully when we start thinking about our world of online students, make that seamless there as well. So, from a timeline perspective, you can see these are our worlds right now. We've got our B-Space, Sakai, which is our Sakai 2X, that will continue on probably until September 2012. At the same time, we're starting to launch Sakai 3, and I will use that word, Sakai 3, here as my Berkeley student portal. And you can see some of the functionality we're thinking about there. And then moving to that teaching and learning functionality as wonderful people like Lance start to really bring that in and provide opportunities. We are looking at this hybrid approach, which he's working on as part of our transition plan. At that point, when we start moving into the teaching and learning, we really are going to bring these together into the Sakai OAE. Something like that. So that's it for us, and I welcome any questions later.
Okay, I'll be brief so that we can get to the questions. Yes. Well, let's see what I can do here. So, a little bit of background that this what I'm going to talk about today, this what we're calling hybrid, is frankly one of the most exciting things that I've ever seen in Sakai, that I've ever had a chance to work on. And it's not because the technology necessarily, but it's exciting in the sense of, as a community, how are we going to behave, right? When Sakai started, one of our original tenets was, we will not be a vendor, right? We will not force upgrades upon you. We will not tell you that you're going to have support roll out. You must upgrade on our schedule. And everyone, you know, said, yeah, that's great. And then, you know, folks went off and built Sakai for a while. And now, all of a sudden, we've got this new open academic environment, and we've got Sakai 2. And the question is, how, as a community, are we going to behave to get you from here to there? And so, I think what we're seeing happen now is extremely interesting, because instead of that forced march upgrade, we're actually giving you tools to make the transition as painless as possible, and to allow you time to make that transition in a way where we're not delivering a big bang migration. And you know, a lot of folks in the Sakai community have been through a migration recently, and no one's willing to go through that again so soon. So the question is, how can we bring in this new innovative technology while at the same time, you know, allowing our faculty and students to maintain some of their sanity? So, just a couple points. This shallower ramp up is a point that I want to talk about a little bit, because the way that we're looking at hybrid back in Indiana is, Sakai 2 is our bread and butter. It's stable. It never goes down, and we don't want to mess with that, right? But at the same time, we'd like to start bringing in some new functionality. So the shallower ramp up is a sense that I can begin bringing in the open academic environment while presenting very little risk to the Sakai 2 instance. And then over time, you know, sort of have graduating levels of risk that you're willing to take as you begin to build confidence in the new system and as your users, you know, begin making that transition as opposed to being forced. And then the longer tail part is really the notion that we're not going to say you must be off Sakai 2. So that transition can really take as long as you want. And what in I would expect that every implementation of Soy and Sakai 2 will be very unique, because each one of our campuses will drive at different paces, maybe in different areas where they want to innovate. And so we want to give you a set of tools that allow you to make those decisions in a way that makes sense locally. And then one of the things we talked about was this some of the open standards. And so some of the things that I'll show you today were implemented using this learning tools interoperability standard. And so not only have we developed some technology around that standard to allow us to consume our tools across systems, but now we've also opened up the door so that now we can begin consuming tools from elsewhere. So I think that's over time we should see a nice ecosystem build up around LTI and common cartridge. So I'm going to get right to the demo. What I'm going to show in this particular example is using Sakai OAE as a new portal to your Sakai 2 instance. The scenario here is I log in. You see across the top that now I have some new Chrome. I've got My Sakai. I've got some content. And so even though we're presenting a user interface that looks very similar to Sakai 2, we're able to bring some of the social capabilities of the new portal into that environment. And our, you know, the goal is if your Sakai 2 and Sakai 3 instances are skinned alike, that your users may log in and not even notice, you know, that the Chrome's at the top and the bottom, and hopefully not be jarred by that experience. But you can see here some of the social capabilities in terms of status and chatting that are painted around that central Sakai 2 experience. And this was the scenario I was saying is extremely low risk, because at this point, if Sakai 3 were to go down, you still have Sakai 2 sitting there with a little redirect and the web layer. You can now send your users back to the Sakai 2 portal. Sure, they'll miss the new Sakai 3 Chrome in terms of the social stuff, but they're not going to lose any work, right? They can get right back where they were. And again, if they're skinned alike, they may not even notice that they got switched back to the old portal. So this is sort of the least risky implementation that you might think about in terms of hybrid. The next scenario I want to show you is a similar experience. In this case, it's actually what we're looking at now is a Sakai 3 site with Sakai 3 pages. And what I've done is I've added a number of pages to this site, and I'm just showing you here real quickly that it is indeed a Sakai 3 site. There's no smoke and mirrors here. And I've got this welcome page where I'm inserting a widget, a Google Maps widget. But along the left here, you see a presentation that looks similar to Sakai 2, where I've got tools along the left. They take up real estate on the right. And again, this could be a next step in user adoption for somebody who's ready to do a little bit more with Sakai 3, but they still don't want to completely change the user experience. And this, what you're seeing here is actually the implementation of the learning tools interoperability. So the Sakai 2 tools that are being painted on that right-hand side are coming, that's an LTI placement there. So that could just as easily be a Blackboard tool or a Moodle tool or some other interesting thing you'd like to include in your course site. Now, one of the things that I'm not going to show, but if you take this capability a little further, Sakai 3 allows you to place as many widgets as you want on a page. And so if there was desire for this, you could have multiple Sakai 2 tools placed on that same page. And that's a new capability that doesn't exist today for end users in Sakai 2. So with that, I think we'll move to the Q&A session. Thank you.
So we purposely tried to keep this a little brief because we assumed that people in the audience might actually have some questions that may pertain to what we talked about here today or maybe on some other topic around Sakai OAE. And so we'd like to open it up to you. I will repeat any question just to make sure that everybody can hear it. We don't have a mic that we can pass around. And again, we can have questions addressed to anybody on the panel, or I could even maybe answer a question. So does anyone have a question? Yeah. Right. Okay. So the question is that we're confused. And is Sakai 3 really a portal technology, and is it seeking to replace the portal layer, or is it doing something else there? And I think, you know, maybe Mara would like to take on that first. Maybe Lance has some thoughts too.
Yeah, I'll let. Can you guys hear me? Okay. Lance, talk about the technology side of this. But indeed, no. In fact, I think Berkeley was doing something. We're stretching the paradigm, so to speak, a little bit. And in seeing what Sakai 3 was going to offer as an online learning environment, we felt like recreating a separate portal for students didn't make sense. And so we're utilizing the Sakai technology to bring that kind of interactivity into the Sakai 3 environment. Thus, we are solving the need for a separate portal.
From a technology perspective,
to us it sounds like
you can't hear us. So from a technology perspective, Sakai 3 is not really intended to be a replacement for UPortal. That's not the space that we're trying to get into. But like Mara's pointing out, is that folks are looking at it in a sense of, if we're going to implement this new thing, some of those folks are all saying, oh, and we need a student portal. You know, why do two instead of one? The technology in Sakai 3, this when I mentioned widgets, that model is all in the browser space, right? That's all HTML, JavaScript. And so the idea of building little blocks of functionality that do something, people are also looking at it and saying, you know, the portlet specs looking a little old, right? And I've got folks that are really good at doing web development, but they're not Java developers. And so Sakai 3 puts us in a position where people can go off and build these little bits of functionality without ever really touching, you know, Java code or the framework, and just build some really nice little lightweight things that you can present to the user, in a sense, as a portal.
Just as a follow-up that I have to that, and maybe you're going in the same direction, is it possible to deploy, like, actual portlet spec widgets inside the Sakai 3 framework?
Not today, no. Okay.
Did you have a follow-up?
Widgets.
Okay, so Alana, it'll be interesting to hear maybe why Berkeley thinks this. So if you already have a portal, why would you want to deploy Sakai 3? Because you already have an environment that you can deploy interactive widgets in. Right. So why is Berkeley deploying?
We don't have a portal. We could say we have 25 portals, and they're all portals into their different areas. And so You know, for us, we're solving a big gap. For if you turn it on its head and say, well, why not bring the learning environment into the portal? You know, why not? You know, and then you have to look for what are the connecting points between those widgets to make it a meaningful learning experience, and that's what Sakai 3 is doing. So, you know, I think there's a good amount of work to that. If you're looking for kind of the experience inside of a portlet or a widget that is your entire experience that you want somebody to have, for example, the webcasting widget, that could live in a separate portal, except that ultimately my goal is to have that embedded deeply into the learning context and the learning sites for courses. And so it's more advantageous for me to start doing that work and building bridges here than it is to go out and build it somewhere else.
Okay, let's actually take a couple of other questions. Yeah.
Yeah, so
and to just repeat the question, so again, we're continuing this conversation about what Sakai 3 really is. If perhaps you're just saying, oh, it's just another portal technology and I already have that and it's already got learning widgets integrated into the existing portal, right?
So, well, you know, we haven't done it in this session. There's been some others, so we didn't want to necessarily repeat stuff, but maybe it would be helpful to talk a little bit about some of the capabilities of Sakai 3 from a teaching and learning and research perspective. So, for example, one of the major areas that a lot of effort's going to is this concept of academic networking. So taking social networking concepts and capabilities, applying them in an academic setting. So you can imagine as faculty members have profiles that have their research and publications and courses in them, the academic networking capabilities of Sakai 3, the Open Academic Network, will be able to connect those people together. So Lance on his screen movies there had on the bottom places where you could see who your quote-unquote friends or colleagues are in Sakai 3, and it's doing being able to connect people up within an institution as well as across institutions. So you could say, well, this faculty member in the science department is doing research that connects with the research you're doing in the business school, and you might want to get together. So that's just one of many kind of, I think, rich new capabilities that Sakai 3 represents. Content authoring is another. So there are very rich content authoring tools in there that go beyond just a WYSIWYG editor but allow wiki-like content authoring. So rather than just one instructor putting a course content together, several across departments can all come into the same content authoring tool and add content. Or maybe students can actually come in and during the course and add content or suggest content for future courses. So I'm not a deep portlet person, but I will say that I think there are a lot of those types of rich capabilities in Sakai 3, as well as a lot of things that you need in any kind of traditional learning management system like a gradebook, which you're not going to find an existing widget out there to use. And so I think we've been talking about some particular use cases here, but there's, I think, a strong teaching and learning set of capabilities that are going to be very, very powerful for today and in the future.
Okay, let's go to the back of the room, Buck. So the question is, for instance, if you're already an existing Sakai school and you decide to go down this hybrid path that Lance was talking about, would there really be two separate instances or technologies running separately that were somehow coming together?
Yes.
There you go. Yeah, actually, I mean, something to say about that is, well, you had more, right?
Well, no, I mean, you're exactly right. You know, you do have two distinct systems. We're doing some proxying at the web layer to make them appear as they're both under the same URL space so that, you know, both systems can access, you know, cookies and, you know, with the cross domain kind of stuff. So, but yes, you're right. But yeah, in terms of the user experience, the goal is that the end user will have no clue that there's two systems, right? That it should be seamless enough to them. Right.
Yeah, so one scenario is that, you know, Sakai 2 capabilities might be shed away as Sakai 3 capabilities overtake them, either because users have adopted them, they're already existing and users have adopted them, or because you know, a new tool, whether it's a Sakai 3 tool or maybe some independent tool that you brought into the environment, replaces whatever functionality you were using in Sakai 2. So technically, the session actually ended already. It was a very short session, which is why we tried to keep it brief. And we're supposed to vacate so that the next group can come in. So I appreciate you all coming. I'd be happy to take more questions outside. I'm sure our panelists will hang around for a minute. But EDUCAUSE is fairly strict about herding us around. So thank you for coming.